Think big. Think positive. Never show any sign of weakness. Always go for the throat. Buy low, sell high. Fear, that's the other guy's problem. Nothing you have ever experienced can prepare you for the unbridled carnage you're about to witness. Right. Super Bowl, the World Series, they don't know what pressure is. In this building, it's either kill or be killed. Right. You make no friends in the pits and you take no prisoners.
No prisoners.
1 minute, you're up half a million in soybeans, and the next, boom, your kids don't go to college and they've repossessed your Bentley. Are you with me?
Find out more about me at turnerstake.com, where we have some of our spec info, and turnerstakeag.com, which is for farmers and ranchers and producers. I'm a broker here at Daniels Trading. We work with broker-assisted clients. We have a fantastic online program, platform called DT Pro, and a great one for the mobile app too, which I like a lot. And then not only do I service both those categories, but I think our most popular here is the hybrid, where it's a mix of both. So if you have any interest in working with us or looking to do something different in 2019, now is a great time to get started, especially for you farmers out there. I'm happy to talk anytime. All my contact information is in the show notes and on those websites. So let's dive into it. This is the first podcast of 2019, so Happy New Year to everyone. We're going to talk more about all the markets, and then kind of focus on the grains, livestock, and ag towards the back end. But let's do a quick review of what's going on from the macro landscape. Two big macro stories going on. First one is U.S. and China. And the trade deal. It seems like things are going well. I mean, if you believe these reports, and also you got to think that both these countries and politically the administrations of both nations need to get on the same page here. So I think that's good. I think that's underpinning some of the grain markets here. I think that's also providing some bullish sentiment for the energies too, which we'll get into, and also the stock market. I think it's going to be positive, whatever comes out of it. There is some talk about China is going to buy some more U.S. Agriculture, energy, and manufacturing products. The way I hear it, and again, there's nothing official yet, we do have clients who are lobbyists and people close to this. So, the way we understand it is China's going to agree to buy a certain dollar amount of product, but it's going to be up to them each year how much they're going to do. So we're not going to hear something like, all right, they're buying $5 billion of this, and they're going to buy $2 billion of this every year and all that. It's more of a one big number. And then, if they need soybeans this year, they need soybeans. If they need rice, they need rice. I mean, with the African swine flu, you think they'd be coming in for pork, right? In the years where they have a huge pork production, maybe they need to feed a lot of animals and they're coming for beans instead. So, and energy and, cotton and manufacturing and whatever it may be. So I think China's going to have the leeway to choose what they want, but they are making a certain commitment of how much to try to close that trade gap, which makes sense. And I think those issues in terms of the balance of trade are easier to sort out for these two countries and administrations and political groups. I think the harder one is intellectual property, but I think both of them realize they need to come kind of halfway on this stuff. I would expect China to open up their economy, which is something that they probably should have done anyways. So this issue is, it's been batted around in the Communist Party for a while. Like, at some point, you got to open up the economy more. And this is probably just the catalyst to finally do that, something they're going to eventually do anyways. And I'm sure that makes it kind of easier in these negotiations. So, they say March 1. I am not going to be surprised if that happens. I think the markets pricing it in, to be honest with you. And there is a little caution of buy the rumor, sell the fact, but we are not there yet, and when we do, we'll get to that. But that's the big macro story number one, setting the tone for the markets. Big macro story number two, which doesn't seem to be as important, is the government shutdown. It's funny, government shutdowns in the past seem to make so much more news. And only about 25% of the government shut down anyways. Anything that's deemed essential, like military, right? CIA, FBI, you know, a whole bunch of government offices are deemed essential and they stay open. But, you know, apparently the USDA and CFTC aren't essential, so they are closed down, and they're about 25% of the government's closed down, and it doesn't seem like anyone wants to budge on this. And I wouldn't be surprised if this went on longer than not. The problem with it from a trader's perspective is, for all the markets, commitment of traders. It would be really nice to know the commitment of trader reports, what, you know, how much open interest is out there. Well, you know the open interest, but the funds and where the positions are in the market, that'd be great to know. Also, there's no USDA reports, and that's a big thing with the grain markets. The grain markets really do need to know where we are in terms of supply and demand. It'd be great to get something there. Also, winter wheat seedings we haven't seen yet. That would be nice. Give us an idea, a clue into maybe the farmer's thinking, and then we can kind of gauge some estimates on the soybean. You can actually take those winter wheat seedings, get an idea of what the changes overall for wheat, kind of extrapolate like what the decisions were made to either add or subtract wheat acres, and then that helps you a little bit with estimating the soybean and corn acres too. So, you know, it's all related. So that's been a little frustrating, but that's just the way we are, and that is the macro side of it all. There is one third story, and I would say just, you know, in terms of that, the Fed has talked a little bit about maybe, you know, being a little bit more easy with policy in terms of interest rate hikes, and I wouldn't be surprised if, they still say we're going to raise rates twice, but maybe it's towards the very end of the year based on how the economy does in the first half of the year. I would not be surprised if that's the kind of tone they take, which would be supportive for the stock market, and the Fed can still kind of keep its word and not backtrack and say we will do something with interest rates, but maybe they're going to wait the first 6 months of the year to see if the economy recovers here, or stabilizes, I should say, and the market stabilizes, which I think is going to happen. So moving on to stocks. My mind, I think the worst of it is over. I mean, kind of famous last words, right? But, you know, if we see in the mid-December, you know, right before Christmas, right around Christmas, we had the big dive down, and since then we've been coming back up. I'm not saying we're going to get to the highs that we saw at the end of the summer, beginning of fall, but it does seem like, you know, the market has priced in a slowdown in growth, not a recession, but a slowdown in growth. And if the U.S. economy grows at 2 or 2.5% instead of 3.5% or 3%, you know, that's okay. We're still growing. We're not going into recession, but, you know, you got to scale back earnings and estimates for the stock market. And I think that's what's been going on here. And also the uncertainty of the government shutdown and the interest rates and China-U.S. is only going to get better. So, I don't know. From a stock perspective here, if I were trading the S&P, I'd probably be on the bias of the long side, but always using a put to maybe protect myself just in case, like one of the weeklies. I like you buy the futures and you buy the weekly put, and you spend a little money on it, but if, you know, everything goes to hell in a handbasket, you've got that put. If not, and the stock market really goes higher, then, you know, that put really shouldn't be so much of a factor in that kind of situation. So that's how I like doing it. If you want to go over strategies, let me know. So moving on to the metals markets, I think we're going to stall out here. I know gold has not been able to break through 1,300, and silver hasn't been able to break through 16. Here's the deal. If the stock market is going to stabilize, and the economy is going to stabilize, then you don't get the flight to safety buy. Now, you do have the U.S. dollar coming down. I think the U.S. dollar is going to continue to come down. So you've got a bullish force and a bearish force, and I think they're just going to kind of combat each other here coming through. So I'm looking for the metals to be a little more range-bound. I don't think we're going back to the lows. I don't think we're going to make the next level higher. That's just where we seem to be right now. As far as U.S. dollar is, it is coming down, and if you look at the chart, it's been breaking down pretty good. So, you know, we are right now at 94.80 as we're doing this podcast, but we were up at 96.97 a while ago, and you can make a case 94 is a support level, but the real big one is probably 92.80, which would be good for a lot of things in terms of exports to the United States, but it just seems weak. And as the U.S. dollar seems weak, that probably means the euro is going to go higher here in the short term, which will be good for... So that's the macro sense. Those four markets are really what make up the macro markets. plus interest rates, which we talked about. I didn't really want to get into Treasury since we were talking about the Fed and interest rates. But, you know, the macro stories, stocks and Treasuries, metals and currencies, those are the real big macro factors of what's going on now. When you drill down now into specific commodity, energy and ag markets and the softs, it looks like crude is recovering. And we have, in fact, bottomed out at around that 42 level, which is the low from some previous years ago. If you look at a chart, crude consolidated for a while in that 50 to 54 area, and when we broke at the end of the year, I'm wondering if that was more low volume and just year-end liquidation and some panic selling and kind of a little bit of a vacuum of a market in the last 2 weeks of the year. And in previous podcasts, I'd said, you know, those last 2 weeks of the year, sometimes things go on sale just because of the low volume and the position squaring and things like that. And it looks like crude and stocks probably were that way. So I think for 2019, you look at the supply and demand of crude, you look at the global growth and U.S. growth. OPEC is going to be cutting supplies in January. Shale is going to be producing a little bit less. Economy is going to stabilize. I wouldn't be surprised if crude traded between 50 and 60, you know, from the low 50s to the low 60s for a while here as we kind of recalibrate for supply and demand, OPEC and shale, and then the global and U.S. growth. And I think that's how we're going to play crude. I think the spreads market go from, which pretty bearish term structure right now, to get close more towards even par on these things. I think there's going to be some opportunity to trade these crude spreads. And I probably, on the, you know, when we sell, I probably want to trade it from the bullish side. So when we do have these sell-offs, you know, I'm probably rather be a buyer than a seller. And really for the main fact that I think it just got overdone. Energies are pretty low right here. And I am a little bit more optimistic about the economy this year, especially with a lot of these deals getting done. I mean, because quite honestly, once the U.S.-China deal gets done and the government opens back up, I don't know, you know, when growth stays the same or better, or even just goes down to 2 or 2.5%, that's not bearish. So I like that. Natural gas, we were expecting to kind of bottom out here. If you look at a natural gas chart, let's say like in Feb, I mean, $3 is really a big support level, so $2.90. We're back to where we were before September. We've had a very long spell of some mild weather this winter, but it's starting to get colder, and I wouldn't be surprised if it was, you know, it has been unseasonably warm. I know it certainly has been where I live in the Chicago suburbs, but I think it's been like that for the rest of the country. We're going to probably get back to colder temperatures, and that should be at least supportive of natural gas. So we'll be keeping an eye on that. Maybe we can find a bull spread or something with some call options to get into. That's our take on energies. As far as the soft market goes, I think coffee's kind of ripe here. You know, that $1 mark is some pretty good support level. It's close to annual lows, and when you look at the you know, breaking above 103, 103.5, you got out of this mini range that it's been in, so that's been a bullish sign. It's probably more short covering than anything, but to get the bulls really involved, we are starting to hear more about weather issues in Brazil, which we'll get to in the grains of the market, but it's affecting coffee. There have been weather issues and production issues in Vietnam, and the past couple of years, we've had supply surpluses at the end of the season. I think we're going to be forecasted for now supply deficits. Now, we'll still have some big coffee stocks, but we're going to have a reversal, I think, in the trend. Not more, you know, like global stocks with grains we'll talk about. You know, for a while there, we had a trend of increasing global stocks and U.S. stocks, and now that's reversed. And I think we're going to start to see that with coffee. So I like coffee. It's a big contract. If you don't want to play the futures, I like bull call spreads or, you know, writing bear put spreads. But I do like that. I think coffee is going to be a good – I think coffee has a much better story now than it has in the past couple of years. So take a look at a chart. And if you are a client Daniels Trading, you get our insider market advisory research. They have some very good comments on coffee. And if you don't get that and you're a client, just contact me and or your broker here, and they'll help you out. Okay, we're going to finish up here with the livestock and the grain markets. Let's go to cattle first. Has been cold. We have lost some tonnage out there. I'm expecting probably we're going to see most likely cattle probably go up a little bit more. I think feeders can go up a couple more bucks. I think fats can even go up a couple more bucks. After that, it seems like those products are fairly priced, or maybe even a little overpriced. So if you're a rancher out there, a hedger, and you have price exposure to that, I would probably look into hedge as we rally up in here. I would also, for the hog market, I think we're going to see, the African swine flu is an issue. We've been playing that Feb versus April spread between -4 and -6. It's actually broken out above that after we took profit, so we'll definitely want to take a look into that again when it comes down on the breaks. But it looks like, when this deal gets done, we're expecting a deal for pork. I'm expecting China to be a buyer of pork. I think that's going to be even more prevalent in this trade deal. And African swine flu is an issue. Now, the market has priced a lot of that into it. So anytime the market starts focusing on how much supply we have on the front end and we sell off, I think that'll be a buying opportunity, and I'd prefer to do it in the deferred spreads. Hogs can be pretty wild, and that's what we'll continue to do. Finally, on the grain markets, I would say the grain market story right now is South American weather isn't so great. We are losing some production in corn and soybeans. It's been too wet in Argentina. We're going to be taking off some corn production there. And when Brazil is the opposite, there are some places that are just too high. We have had rains recently. The moisture is okay, but the moisture levels down there don't hold moisture like the corn belt up here. So they'll get stressed a lot faster. If we lose 5 to 10 million metric tons of corn in South America, that's going to be 200 to 400 million bushels of corn. The general rule is whatever you lose down there, half of it comes back in export demand to the United States. So right now I'm saying worst case scenario, you lose 10 million metric tons, 400 million bushels, 200 million bushels comes back to the United States in form of exports split between old crop and new crop. That's nice. Definitely. It's not like a game changer, but it certainly helps with stocks here. Same thing with soybeans. If they lose 5 to 10 million metric tons, again, that's 200 to 400 million bushels. Let's say 100 to 200 million come back to the United States in form of exports. Normally, that'd be a pretty big deal. But when we're talking about 600 or 700 million carryout on the old crop soybeans, it helps. But maybe that's why we're up to 930 anyways. And that's why, March corn is above 380. I think the market is I really think with the grain markets is we're pricing in a Chinese deal, and we've been pricing in this weather issue. If the weather issue gets worse, then the markets can definitely come up. But if China buys 5 to 10 million metric tons, that puts our ending stocks for old crop between like 750 and 600 million. All right, at that point, even at 600 million old crop, we're at 15% stock to usage on soybeans. We're still in the low to mid-low $9 range, right? So, and that's, I think, March keeps on stalling out at 930. To get us past that, we got to start talking about ending stocks below 600 million, right? Where we're below 15% stock to usage. About 400 and change, like 410 is the 10% stock to usage ratio. So what we got to do is just, to fight through that, we're going to need either more losses in South America, a bigger buy than the market's already been expecting from China, or to kind of make up for it in the back end, which is less of an influence on old crop prices, which would be more new crop acres. Less new crop acres. So that's where we are, and it's just I find it hard to see new crop get farther than like 970 right now, and old crop getting higher in March, higher than 930. If we're still talking about projections that leave us at a 600 million carryout for soybeans. And again, that's assuming China comes in and buys not just the 5 million metric tons that we've heard it's already done, but maybe like after the tariffs come down, there's another 5 million metric tons. So the Chinese private companies don't buy that much. Maybe Brazil loses some product off the top of their big crop, and it's just not as big, and maybe that comes back to us in terms of export. So that's really where we are. I do see short-term maybe some price improvement in beans now, but at some point, we'll probably be a selling opportunity as long as the crop in South America doesn't burn up. So if you are going to short the soybean market, I think it does make sense to buy a short-term call just to get you through the next couple of weeks or month. Something up top that's not too pricey. And then if you're a hedger, I think you're also looking to kind of sell anything, any kind of weather rally that comes out of this. I think you need to make a little bit of sales up there too. For the spec players out there and any kind of re-ownership, the spreads do look interesting, like NOVA versus NOVA and July versus NOVA. And if there really are weather issues, those will take off. If not, they'll just flounder and it won't be too much of a risk. Probably be cheaper than buying a call. But that's that. With the corn market, Oh, and one last thing about soybeans. New crop acres. If we're 85 million or higher, that's probably going to be seen as bearish for the market. If we're 85 million or lower, that'll be bullish. So, for example, if we had 83 million acres and China buys 10 million metric tons and we have some weather issues in South America, all of a sudden new crop could be a 300 million carryout. And that's 10 bucks. That is 10 buck soybeans. Not for that crop year and well into it. But if China only buys 5 million metric tons and we grow 85 million metric and we have 85 million acres and then stocks are closer, to somewhere in the 500s, like mid 500s. And, we're kind of in the same situation, beans trading in the low to mid to high nines, right? So that's kind of how we're going to gauge our trading and marketing in the soybean market. As for corn, a little bit rosier picture, but a 1.6, 1.7 billion carryout. We're thinking yields come down. Whenever the government opens back up in U.S. reports, we are expecting yields to come down a little bit and exports to go up a little bit. Everyone's going to factor in a little bit of token buying from China on corn. And Argentina is going to lose a little crop. Would not be surprised to see ending stocks for corn, old crop corn, eventually come in at around 1.5, 1.6. Which, by the way, if that happens, then the front month futures can trade $4. I think it'd be very difficult to get above 3.95 and 4, given how much old crop there is out there. And if farmers can pencil it and make it work and raise cash and get rid of the old crop, I think they will, and thus buy it back on the border or something like that. So if I was a farmer, I'd probably be looking to make cash sales when the futures get to 3.95 or 4 on the if we get up there. There's no guarantee that we will, but if we should, I think there's going to be a lot of selling. I still like straddles because we'd still be in that range. If I were going to be on the spec side in the short term, I'd be looking to get a little bit long here, because if we do have weather issues, or at least the threat of weather in South America for the next couple of weeks with the positive news coming out to US-China, you think that would help push things up, to 385 in March, maybe 390. I think that makes sense. But if we're talking about a 1.6, 1.5, 1.7 carryout, it's a ton of support for nearby corn then in the 360s, or 370s, I would say. I mean, if we get to 360s, I can't imagine us getting to 360 in the front month with 1.5 or 1.6 carryout. It'd just be too tight to be down there. So that's the story with corn. Wheat should have as far as new crop corn, the wild card here is acres. Well, it'd be great to see the winter wheat seedings, and we'll get to wheat. We'll wrap up with wheat, but it would really be nice because what I'd love to see too is, if we have 91 million acres and a trend line yield, corn's not so bad. We go from like a 1.5 to a 1.7, 1.8 carryout for the new crop, and you can have some nice weather rallies where we can sell corn into like the low fours again, maybe 425, 430. That could happen again. If we have 93 million acres, that makes it a little bit tough because now the ending stocks get to 2 billion or higher on the projected. And that's where, corn rarely gets above $4. That's when corn's always in the mid to high threes. So it would be great to see under 93 million acres, if it was 91 or 92 and trend line yield, and then you have some summer hiccups in between like the one, the carry and now, and maybe Argentina has some issues. All of a sudden, we may be in the high threes again or mid threes at harvest next year, but you can get those summer rallies into the fours and up there like 420, 430, 440 if it gets real hot. Those can happen. Those rallies can happen, and that would be nice to see because we'd certainly like to sell into those during planting and in the summer months for corn. So I'm a little bit more, I'm definitely a little more rosy for the corn than soybeans. But again, it's going to all come down to, really love to see what acres look like. Wheat should have a story here over the next couple of months. Wheat is getting tighter around the world. Global nations that export wheat on the global market are getting tighter. The United States is getting more and more competitive every week in the cash market, and we've looked to see that to come up. So I wouldn't be surprised if wheat comes up 20 or 30 cents at some point in the next month or two, just as the cash prices kind of peak, and as we get closer to, let's say, April, May, and June, other places around the world will have wheat and potentially the high quality, high protein wheat. And then once we get into June and July, then the new crop is going to be harvested here in the United States, and the story is going to be over. So the time to market and kind of be bullish, I think, wheat is going to be over the next month or two. And that's how we'll trade it and market it. So that is the rundown of all the markets for Turner's Take. I hope you like it. If you like this podcast, please pass it along. If you're looking for to do something different or work with us in the markets this year, please contact me. And for existing clients, I've got a lot of ideas. They all don't always make the newsletter, so feel free to call in and chat anytime about whatever you're interested in. If you like the show, please go over to iTunes and give us a rating. That really helps us out. And again, pass it along to anyone. You can find me at turnerstake.com, turnerstakead.com. Have a great week, and I will talk to you soon.
This material is conveyed as a solicitation for entering into a derivatives transaction. This material has been prepared by a Daniels trading broker who provides research market commentary and trade recommendations as part of his or her solicitation for accounts and solicitation for trades. Daniels Trading, its principals, brokers, and employees may trade in derivatives for their own accounts or for the accounts of others. Due to various factors such as risk tolerance, margin requirements, trading objectives, short-term versus long-term strategies, technical versus fundamental market analysis, and other factors, such trading may result in the initiation or liquidation of positions that are different from or contrary to the opinions and recommendations contained therein. Past performance is not necessarily indicative of future performance. The risk of loss in trading futures contracts or commodity options can be substantial, and therefore, investors should understand the risks involved in taking leveraged positions and must assume responsibility for the risks associated with such investments and for their results. You should carefully consider whether such trading is suitable for you in light of your circumstances and financial resources. You should read the risk disclosure accessed at www.danielstrading.com. Daniels Trading is not affiliated with, nor does it endorse any trading system, newsletter, or similar service. Daniels Trading does not guarantee or verify any performance claims made by such systems or services.